The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Wednesday on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Alongside Haley Stasiak, I'm Jordan Hamm. Hope everybody did their research and voted yesterday. That's my little political plug there. But
my civic duty.
Yeah.
First time.
It's your responsibility. Got a great show for you. Brad talking to some big name guests here. First off, we have CBS college football analyst, Arizona Hotshots head coach Rick Neuheisel. Plenty to get to with Coach Neuheisel about this Arizona Hotshots team, what's going on in college football. So Brad's going to sit down with him. Of course, we have Michael Fabiano each and every Wednesday answering your fantasy football questions. You have questions, he has answers, and more than likely, he's right. And then for Talk to the Lopes, we have GCU soccer forward Alex Ramirez. Brad's going to sit down with him and cover a lot of ground on his career on and off the field. So really good stuff. We are going to go ahead and get things started with our news and notes. Our rundown is brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. Haley, a lot of things to cover, but I want to talk about the college basketball season starting. I was over at Arizona State last night.
Exciting one. Late one for you.
It was a late one. Pulled out the double OT win over Cal State Fullerton. Cal State Fullerton, a tournament team last year, won the Big West tournament. Had a lot of talent returning, and you saw that. They have some really good guards that kind of tore up ASU at times, but they return a lot of talent. For Arizona State as well, a lot of newcomers, whether it's by transfer or commits, coming in. Guard U has kind of transformed to Big Guard U, but a lot of really good stuff here. And I think people should be excited about this team. Lugans Dort, in his debut, 28 points.
Wow.
And that is the record for a freshman debut. Most points ever. And he started the game 0-for-5 and had three layups that he probably should have made, so those numbers should be even bigger, but
That's
a lot of
crazy.
Really impressive stuff from ASU basketball.
You know, I'm looking at some of these scores from last night and some of these matchups, and I like that ASU scheduled Cal State Fullerton, who was a tournament team here, because you look at some of these, and I mean, some of these are like triple digits to like 55, like 102 to 48 here. Just kind of very lopsided games. It's those early games where some teams schedule early teams, and we see this across every sport. They're scheduling those teams early just to kind of get
the
rhythm. Yes. So I like that ASU scheduled this tough matchup, and to have it go into double OT, it kind of sets that mid-season tone in the first game of the season.
And it, like, you could see ASU, they haven't gotten in their rhythm yet.
Which it's the first game.
It's a lot of new players. A lot of them were banged up in the offseason, so they didn't get a ton of practice time together. Tayshaun Cherry didn't play a ton of basketball. He's kind of one of the highlight recruits that came in. Remy Morton, after the game, Bobby Hurley said he was at about 60%, so he didn't start. He played about 30 minutes. I don't think they meant for him to play 30 minutes, but when you go to double overtime and have a few guys get in foul trouble, Remy Martin was going to play. He had a couple of key baskets in that double overtime. But this is just kind of a classic Bobby Hurley schedule, where you have Cal State Fullerton. Long Beach State is a pretty good team. San Francisco, a solid WCC team. And then they're going on the road. They have Mississippi State, Nevada, Vanderbilt, and then that big game at Kansas, and Princeton, who is usually in the tournament, one of the Ivy League teams. That's all before the new year. So that's all the non-conference, and then you have your Pac-12 schedule. I have a feeling that this team's going to be a tournament team. I'm excited about what this team can do and being able to cover it.
Well, after last season, the sky's the limit here this year. So they can only go up, really, because it was such a good year last year, and they've built upon that. So it'll be exciting.
Yeah. So a very different team. We'll see what they look like. They aren't kind of the three-point shooters that they had last year with Trey Holder, Shannon Evans, Cody Justice. But it'll be interesting to see kind of how the season progresses. So a lot of really good stuff from ASU in their first game. But also, as Bobby Hurley said, plenty to grow from.
A lot.
So coming up
next. A lot of basketball to come.
Yep. Coming up next, we have Rick Neuheisel, a CBS college football analyst, as well as the Arizona Hotshots head coach. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show.
Now we're joined by CBS Sports, Sirius XM host on Full Ride, and the head coach of the Arizona Hotshots, as mentioned, and Valley High School phenom. How's that for a word for Rick Neuheisel? Were you a phenom in high school, Rick?
Oh, let's go with that. I mean, it's been so long ago. Let's go ahead and go with that. No, I in no way was a phenom. I happened to be on a really good team, though. Carl Kiefer was our coach.
Yep.
And he was a phenom and still is a phenom, having just celebrated his 80th birthday, and a number of ex-Chargers got together with him. So a salute to Coach Carl. He was fantastic.
That's great. That's great. It's good to hear your voice. We got a lot going on out here. I want to get to the hot shots off the top. Before I want to touch on Brock Purdy and N'Keal Harry and all these football angles around Arizona. But let's get into the hot shots for a minute. And where are you at in this process of putting a roster together? You're the head coach. I'm hearing buzz. I've had people that have bought tickets for the Alliance of American Football. Just talk about your process.
Well, I tell you what, it's a blast to be a part of it. Phil Savage is our general manager, and he's outstanding.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, when I was approached by Bill Polian to do this, I said, can I pick my general manager? And I'm not sure he gave me an affirmative, but I went ahead and did it anyway. And I could not be more excited about the roster that he's put together. There's a bunch of people. The folks in the Valley will recognize a number of ex-Sun Devils that are on this roster, and more still to come. A lot of interest with more guys from the past wearing that maroon and gold. So I'm excited about this roster. The NFL has kind of raided us. We had a number of guys signed that the NFL came and picked up as practice squad guys.
Yeah.
So that's good evidence that Phil's on the right people. So hopefully we'll get some of those guys back. But this is really exciting. And we got together as a coaching staff, and I could just tell by the energy in the room that everybody is just counting the days till we get to convene with these players in December for physicals, and then in January for training camp in San Antonio.
Talking with Rick Neuheisel. So I'm hearing that the quarterback side of it, there's like a quarterback combine in San Antonio.
Yeah. So
later this month.
So here's what's going to happen, Brad. There's this next week in San Antonio, all the quarterbacks are going to convene and go through kind of like a mini camp.
Yeah.
So all of the GMs and quarterback coaches' eyes will be on them. And then we go back and we have our brain trust meeting and determine how we want to select. The Hotshots have the third choice. So we, in round one, and this will all be telecast on CBS, in round one, we'll make the determination whether we're going to protect one of our guys who has been allocated to us, meaning a quarterback that went to a school that's on our allocation list. Mike Bercovici, for example, is on that list right now. Or if we think that by passing, we might get somebody that we deem as better for our franchise.
Mm.
So each team will, in round one, go through and decide, are they passing, trying to get to somebody that they saw in this camp that they think might fit their system better, or are they going to protect somebody that's currently on your roster? You can only protect one, and then you'll end up having four that will go to camp, three of which will make the team. So it's going to be wild, but I know Hugh Freeze, our offensive coordinator, is really excited about getting to San Antonio and watching all these guys go through their paces.
Yeah, how did you get Hugh Freeze, Rick? Because that was a name, and I'm sure it had to do with Phil. I talked to Phil at an event here a few weeks back, but getting Hugh Freeze on your staff, I mean, Rick Neuheisel, Hugh Freeze, this is not messing around in terms of name recognition and experience.
Well, you know, when I took the job with CBS, having left the Pac-12 network, I wanted to familiarize myself with the programs in the SEC,
mm-hmm.
like I felt I had that relationship with the programs in the Pac-12. As I've said many times, I'd been booed or fired by everybody in the Pac-12. So I needed to get that kind of relationship with the guys in the SEC conference. Well, having gone around to the 14 schools, Hugh Freeze was the guy that, you know, I admired the most watching their practices, especially with the quarterbacks. And we became friendly, and he gave me, you know, insider information, if you will. And
sure,
I thought he was the kind of guy that I really appreciated. Obviously, he's gone through some tough things publicly. But in talking to him when this opportunity presented itself, and my wife and and I had dinner with his wife and him, it just felt like, you know, everybody in life deserves a second chance. And right. I'm happy that I'm in position to do so. And I know he can flat coach football. And I know also he's really looking forward to it. So I think Hotshot fans are going to be really excited about Hugh Freeze and his offense.
No, I mean, it's really, really something. Talking with Rick Neuheisel, CBS Sports, Sirius XM host, and, of course, head coach of the Arizona Hotshots. All right, from a distance, you stay in touch with what's going on out here, but you're in New York for CBS. But what have you made out of the jobs of both Kevin Sumlin and Herm Edwards this season? From my point of view, we're actually going to have a territorial cup that could mean something more than two mediocre teams battling to go to the Sun Bowl. No offense to the Sun Bowl, nice people, but I'd like it to mean more than that. What do you make out of what's going on out here?
Well, let's just say this. When people scoffed at the Herm Edwards hire, they have to eat their hats, proverbial hats, today, because it's the Sun Devils as the only team in the South that control their own destiny. It has been remarkable to watch. Their consistency has been remarkable. When they've fallen short, it's been by one score. They've been in every game. They've taken an attack that is going to make the offense and defense more NFL-like, shorten the game, play within themselves, and it's been an absolute blast to watch, in particular this last win against Utah. That was something to behold. So I think it's remarkable. Now, for Arizona, given where Khalil Tate was and the absolute departure of his legs from the offense, I'd given up on Kevin Sumlin and the Wildcats. Mm. And that win 2 weeks ago against Oregon in a night game, I thought was maybe as shocking as any game I'd seen all season long in college football. Oregon, I thought, was a really good team. I thought they had a top draft choice at quarterback. I kind of gave them a pass for losing at Washington State, given that game day had arrived there and all the pomp and circumstance and coming off the emotion of a win over the Huskies at home. But for Arizona to rub them like they did, I said, wait a minute. And then to come back and follow it up with another performance in front of the home crowd against Colorado, I think is remarkable stuff. And both those guys deserve big accolades. I know Arizona needs help to get there, but in this topsy-turvy South, it isn't unlikely that help will come.
No, that's a good point. From a distance, N'Keal Harry, best wide receiver in the country you've seen. You sit there and you watch SEC football every week. Where do you put N'Keal Harry?
Well, he's fabulous. I mean, he's that proverbial body that is open even when he's covered. You know, when you watch him play, there can be an adjacent defender, but when the ball goes up, it belongs to him. He's had a highlight reel worth of catches. And when he relaxes and just lets the ball and the game happen and the ball come to him, then I think he's a much better player. There were some games maybe in the middle section of the season thus far where it looked like he was getting a little anxious, that he was putting pressure on himself, maybe pressure on Manny Wilkins to get him the ball. And I think that's a mistake. You just have to let the game happen. And obviously this last game against Utah is a perfect example of what can happen.
Out here, too, there's been a lot of buzz about a little high school kid who wasn't recruited at all. In fact, Brock Purdy's dad, 11 months ago, called me and said, what junior colleges do you think my son should be looking at? Now he goes to Iowa State, Rick, and he's just killing it. I don't know if you had a chance to watch him much. What do you make out of Brock Purdy if you have seen him?
I have seen him play for the Cyclones, and I thought he was outstanding. And then to do a little back research on him, one of my assistants on the Hotshots is a fellow by the name of Steve Axman.
Sure.
Steve was the head coach up at NAU for a number of years, did a great job for the Lumberjacks. He and I coached together at both UCLA and Washington, and he's a great friend, and I'm excited that he's going to get a chance to coach with us for the Hotshots. He also was with the Rattlers.
Yep.
But he was working at the high school that Brock Purdy went, and Brock Purdy's one of his guys. So he's telling me all about him, and it's no shock at all to Steve Axman that this is the case. The kid just really gets it, and Matt Campbell's got himself a winner there. And Iowa State has a legitimate chance if they win. I know they've got a big game this weekend, but if they can get by Texas next week, they'll be sitting there watching that West Virginia Oklahoma game in the final game of the season, hoping that Oklahoma knocks off West Virginia, and it wouldn't be a shock to any of us to see the Cyclones play Oklahoma for the Big 12 championship. That's where Brock Purdy's taken that team, and it's amazing stuff.
Last question. You sit there and you watch Alabama every week. Is it just a foregone conclusion when we get through the CFP that they're the champs?
The likelihood is yes. Now, there are things that always, you know, upset the apple cart. We've watched enough college football over the years to know that.
Yep.
But Tua Tagovailoa is magic. The offensive line can move people and protect as well as any in college football. The running game just mustered up 280 yards against an LSU defense that we know is, you know, built to stop the run. The defense just shut out LSU for the second time in 3 years. And I think, and by the way, that defense, that Alabama defense held LSU to 12 yards, the same LSU offense that ran for 275 against Georgia. So it's a complete team. Barring injury, the likelihood is, and Nick Saban will be smoking another cigar.
There you go. As always, I appreciate your time and your insight. We like what's going on with the Hotshots, doing a lot around them, and look forward to seeing you with them down the road, Rick. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate it, and I hope those folks in the Valley will come out and support us. It's going to be fun. I promise you, you're going to feel a part of it. And I told this league that Arizona was the place to be, and I hope the folks will prove us right, because we're going to have a blast, I promise you.
See you, Rick. Thanks.
All right, Brad. Take care.
Take care. There's Rick Neuheisel with us, head coach of the Hotshots, CBS Sports, Sirius XM. His show on Sirius, Full Ride, is about as good a college meat sandwich as you will get every week and every day. I mean, they do great stuff over there at Sirius. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now it is time to turn our attention to the man who fires coaches on Twitter. That would be Michael Fabiano. Senior fantasy analyst, man who fires coach of team that he loves. The NFL media man that you can see on the NFL Network who fires the coach in midstream last night.
Enough already, though? I mean, come on. Enough already. Like, we're going to lose our next five games. At best, we'll go 1-4. I mean, it's enough. Enough with Jason Garrett. I mean, I've had enough. What does he want? Nothing.
What is it that you have against Jason Garrett?
I mean, it's just time for change, man. It's just time for a change. You know, Garrett's not had much success. And as a Cowboys fan, you're looking to, you know, maybe win a Super Bowl here or there, okay? And that happened in a very long time. I mean, this is, what are we, 1995? I mean, that was a long time ago. I was young back then. It's just time for a change. Like, we've had one legit coach since Jimmy Johnson left, and that was Bill Parcells. It's just time. It's time. Listen, I get it. You know, JJ likes having the puppet strings with his coach. Just, it's done. It's over.
So for those of you that are not aware, Michael is on Twitter, and some of you hammer him every week, but some of you are Cowboy diehards, and you've died hard. So go to Michael's Twitter feed and follow him. I'm trying to, you know, boost up your followers of just Cowboy fans that are like you. on a serious note, okay, so I'm getting a lot of questions. I'm going to get to the playoffs in a minute because I want to go that angle with you, but I'm getting a lot of questions today about Dez Bryant. Now, Dez Bryant sitting out there, he worked out for the Saints. What are you hearing about Dez Bryant? Should he be added this week?
Nah, not for me. There's better wide receivers. I mean, the first guy I'd probably be targeting this week is Marquez Valdez-Scantling, if he's still out there. I told people to pick him up last week and start him because I like the matchup. And Dez has been sitting around all season.
Yeah.
I mean, the same kind of situation with Le'Veon Bell. He's been sitting around all season, and he'll go to a team that already has a clear-cut number one wide receiver. They've got a talented number two there in Traquan Smith. They've got one of the best pass-catching running backs in the league in Alvin Kamara. I just don't see it as a good fantasy fit.
Benjamin Watson's there too, which I like.
Two of his last three games, he's put up double-digit points.
So you're not big. So that's another former Cowboy that got away, but it's not a big deal because he's not doing much.
Well, he didn't get away. They let him go.
Yeah, they let him go. Well, he got out. He got out of jail in time. Let's go over to the playoffs. So Todd Gurley finishes with the Cardinals and the 49ers. From a strategy standpoint, do you start looking at playoffs around now and saying, if Malcolm Brown is going to get the bulk of the snaps at running back, or Sean Mannion is going to get bulk of the snaps over Jared Goff, how do you play these guys that are killing it and yet may sit or not play much the last 2 weeks when you're in playoffs?
But the good thing is that the Rams are in a race for the number one seed. Like, they just lost their first game. The Saints are right there. So you might not have to worry about that. And the way that the schedule has been set up over the last few seasons, there's more important games in terms of divisional games at the end of the season. There was a time years ago where, like, if you drafted Peyton Manning when he was with the Colts, yeah, you almost knew that the Colts were going to win that division, and they were probably going to be a one or two seed in the AFC, and you were going to lose them for week 16. But you don't really see that much anymore. So unless you go through to week 17, then you have some potential issues. But as it stands right now, I mean, these guys are they're in a race for that number one seed, and as good as the team has been, it's not as if they're already two or three games up on that. It's close, and they just got beat by the Saints. So
okay, so same deal with Tom Brady then, because the Chiefs are hanging around.
But I mean, the Patriots never sit their guys.
Yeah.
Like, they almost never sit their players, so that's not going to be an issue. Like, the Chiefs, I don't know if they would do that in Week 16. My guess would be no, because we don't see that much anymore. That's why you end your fantasy season in Week 16 and not Week 17, because in Week 17 is when you really run into the risk of these star players potentially being rested ahead of the playoffs.
Okay, so you mentioned Valdes-Scantling. He is being added all over the place. Is he a long-term play there in Green Bay from your view?
Well, long-term, if we're talking about this season, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
you know, Geronimo Allison's going to be out for a while. He's banged up. And Randall Cobb, I mean, he's a slot receiver who's really sort
does
of
nothing. He does nothing.
Season. He's not going to produce much for
no.
you. So, and the Packers have like two of the toughest names to pronounce. You've got Valdes-Scantling, and then you've got Equanimeous St. Brown. They have had a lot of trouble, I'm sure, pronouncing those names in the land of the cheese in the off season and into the preseason and now through the regular season. But these guys are catching passes from the best quarterback on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, Aaron Rodgers. And Valdes-Scantling, I mean, he's basically running the same number of routes per game as Davante Adams. And catching passes from Rodgers in an offense that's going to score points, there's no reason this guy shouldn't be owned already. And if he's out there, grab him now. And another wide receiver who his name is much easier to pronounce is Maurice Harris. Keep tabs on him. Last week had a big game, best game of his career, and led the Redskins in targets. They just lose Paul Richardson for the season, and he is running about 77% of his routes out of the slot. This is a guy who, against the Buccaneers, who are terrible against slot receivers, and I figure I say this 10 times a week, but it's true. If you need a wide receiver this week, you know, Harris, assuming that Jamison Crowder is inactive again, he could be a nice under-the-radar play for you.
Talking with Michael Fabiano, the man who kills coaches, on Twitter, at Michael
Listen,
Fabiano. Or
it's
just Cowboy Coaches.
It's just frustration.
Just a Cowboy coach.
I get it. Everyone likes to make fun because I root for the Cowboys, but look at the last two decades. It hasn't actually been all rainbows and ice cream, man. It's been tough.
Latavius Murray, time to move on with Dalvin Cook coming back. Getting that from the mailbag.
I mean, if I have Dalvin and I have Latavius, I'd probably want to keep Murray just in case, because the one thing that would be awful would be for Dalvin to re-injure himself and then you've cut Murray and now you're in trouble. Dalvin has one of the best playoff schedules among running backs. Very favorable. So if you have Murray and Dalvin's not on your team and you want to pick up a hot free agent because the Vikings are on a bye this week, I get it. But if you have Cook and Latavius, I might want to hold on to Latavius just in case as insurance.
If you're looking at playoffs, Russell Wilson or Andy Dalton long term?
I'd rather have Russell Wilson. I mean, Andy Dalton's taking a hit. His number one wide receiver's out. And this week, if Green were active, Andy Dalton would be a very good streamer. No question about that, because the Saints defense has given up fantasy points to quarterbacks hand over fist. But you've got AJ out. I mean, John Ross is banged up, may or may not be active this week. But, I mean, even if he is, what has he really done? You're looking at a situation here where Dalton's averaging in 10 career games without AJ Green. He's averaging one touchdown pass per game. So I'd rather have Russell in. Even with Russell's struggles, it was good to see him running the ball a little bit in Week 9 because, I mean, he's on pace to put up the worst rushing totals of his career, which I don't understand because that's a big part of his game. And I don't know why he has sort of been relegated to becoming a pocket passer. Maybe he's just not running as much. I don't get it. But he's been a pretty big disappointment so far this season. Very uneven in terms of his production.
Two other questions. We'll let Michael Fabiano go. Wentz, Watson, who do I roll with?
Well, Watson's on a bye this week, and Wentz has been tremendous. I mean, he had that slow start coming off the knee injury, and ever since then he's been good. And people seem to forget, and I get it, because Nick Foles won the Super Bowl for the Eagles last year. But Carson Wentz was an MVP candidate, both in real football and in fantasy football. When he got hurt, he had 33 touchdown passes. He was balling, and now he is balling even more. And he's got Golden Tate now to throw the football to, in addition to Alshon Jeffrey and Zach Ertz. So I like Wentz, and I say you play the matchups with those two quarterbacks down the stretch, but I wouldn't be surprised if Wentz is the better guy. He's been very good.
A lot of questions, and I ask you this every week, but you get them too, I'm sure. Is it time to finally clear Le'Veon Bell from James Conner?
Well, if you can trade Le'Veon Bell and get something for him, like, I would do it. I don't. So we've had Aditi Kikabwala on our podcast last week, and I mean, she gave us so many great scenarios, and there's so many different things that can happen with Le'Veon Bell. He comes back, it's a committee, he comes back, they use him as a wide receiver, he comes back, he doesn't play for the Steelers, he accrues his time, there's a million different scenarios. But from a fantasy perspective, if you have Connor, I mean, you just keep rolling him out there. Bell comes back. I don't know that he would be given his starting job back. Let's keep in mind, Le'Veon had a much shorter holdout last year. And in his first two games back, I mean, he wasn't himself. And now you're talking about an even longer holdout. I mean, when was the last time he played football? It was like 11 months? I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So who knows what kind of condition he's in. He's not going to be in football shape because you don't stay in football shape not playing football. So he comes back, maybe it's 2 or 3 weeks before he's back to being, you know, the dude that we all know and love, at least loved in the past. But if I can move Le'Veon and get something valuable in return, then I'm seriously considering doing it because there's so much uncertainty right now. But the one thing that I believe is certain is that he is not going to come back and get a featured role in that offense. He's not. Even if he's losing a percentage of the touches to James Conner, they could be near the goal line because Conner has proven to be a better short yardage back, a better goal line back, a better guy in terms of yards after contact. The Steelers are not going to sit this kid back down on the bench and be like, hey, thanks for the last 10 weeks, we're going to Le'Veon. I don't think that's going to happen. So I've tried to trade him. No one's biting on it, which is ridiculous because, you know, if you were talking about wanting to trade Le'Veon Bell heading into the stretch run of the fantasy season before all this mess, everyone would be chomping at the bit to try to get him. Nobody wants him right now. Nobody wants him right now. Or if they do, they're trying to sort of lowball you on an offer, and you can't do that either.
There he is, Michael Fabiano, who would like Jason Garrett and Le'Veon Bell to be together on a boat somewhere, I'm guessing.
What I would like is for Garrett to be, you know, at more Dodgers games next season, like all of them in the fall.
Wow.
And
wow.
That's fine.
Take a shot.
It's fine.
Oof.
I mean, you know, there was a time when Garrett became like a hot head coaching commodity that the Baltimore Ravens were like this close to getting him. And that might have been the worst thing that happened to the Cowboys is that they kept him. Because
Listen, I'm so frustrated.
I'm so frustrated. At least I have fantasy football, Brad. At least I have fantasy football because the Cowboys are killing me. They're killing me. And people will say, you won all the Super Bowl, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I haven't been to a Super Bowl since 1995, okay? The Cowboys, it's been a long time. And look at the records that the Cowboys have produced since basically the end of the triplets. I mean, it hadn't been that good. I guess we all suffer.
You are on a roll. I love this. I'll let
you
go.
Not only that, I've been having some fun on Twitter this week, actually.
No, you have been. You have been. See ya. Yeah. Appreciate it, as always.
All right, pal.
See ya. There's Michael Fabiano at the NFL Network. Just now, that's a frustrated Cowboy fan. How about them Cowboys, huh? Imagine going to work at the NFL Network every day. People are like, hey, man, your team blows. How much fun that would be. Sports360AZ.com. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics. This week we focus in on men's soccer. They begin play in the WAC tournament in Seattle later this week. As the number 4 seed, they'll take on number 5 Utah Valley and get going from there. The teams won 3 straight games against the WAC's best, Utah Valley, nationally ranked Air Force, and UNLV. This week on Talk to the Lopes, Alex Ramirez is with us as we talk GCU soccer. It's a hometown kid that's made it good from Ironwood High to GCU and has overcome a ton of adversity. Hey, Alex, thanks for coming on Talk to the Lopes. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on here.
Oh, no worries. No worries. How are things? How's your day?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's good. I got done with training earlier, just getting everything packed and ready to head out to Seattle here soon.
You're winding down your career at GCU. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you've overcome, as I said off the top, a lot. I myself have been through 4 ACL surgeries. It's not fun coming back. My wife has had 20 surgeries on her ACL and has had 2 total knee replacements.
No way.
So when I talk knee to knee with somebody about sitting on the edge of the table and having a therapist try to make you cry as the best type of therapist, and ice and stim are your buddies, am I speaking your language?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. The funny thing is that's what got me to do physical therapy, like, for school.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all about physical therapy, completely understand it. But when I first hurt myself, Shellis told me, like, when you work so hard for something and you sacrifice so much, no matter what happens to you, really, it's just difficult to give it up. So, like, I've invested so much into soccer and GCU in general that I just couldn't give it up, and I was willing to go through that grueling physical therapy process just so I could get back, definitely help the team win.
And I forgot to mention, along with you, you've had 2 ACLs, right?
Yeah.
And my daughter's tore her ACL twice playing soccer in college, too. So,
so
there's a lot there, knowing your story, that you probably had some days where you're sitting on the edge of the table after your first tear. It's like, this hurts like nothing I've ever been through. And then in your second tear, you're probably sitting there saying, I am never going to be able to come back. So give the fans an idea as to when you hurt it first and when you hurt it second, the mental highs and lows you had to go through.
So the first one happened right after freshman year. So I came in freshman year, pretty much started almost every game, doing very well. Was looking forward to coming back next season. But over summer, I played like my last year of club. And we were at Nationals in Oklahoma, I believe. And it was like the semifinal game. I just beat the guy, and he just scissored my legs, clipped me from behind.
Mm.
And I knew instantly something was wrong. Like, you feel the pop.
Yep.
And just the radiating pain, and it's unstable, can barely walk on it. So got that checked out, and thankfully Coach Hyman was able to give me an opportunity. He let me recover, and because he still thought I could contribute to the team. So I'm about 9 months into my physical therapy, getting ready to get cleared, get back out there. And it was over spring, and I was just doing a shooting drill. And the ball came across me. I planted, went to go strike the ball. And right when I planted, felt it pop again.
Ugh.
Same knee. Yeah, and I was like, this is ridiculous, man. And definitely contemplating, and I'm giving up, and just trying to focus on school. But then again, like I said earlier, Shell, it's just like, you sacrifice so much for it. Like, take your time, think about what you want to do. And that was honestly probably the best decision I've made, was trying to go through that rehab process again and come back.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out. It was good.
When you get on the plane to go to Seattle, this could be it for you, right? I mean, this is the end of the career. And unless you decide to, you know, keep playing beyond that, but it sounds like you have some other goals and aspirations. So just take me through the lead up to this game that you're going through, or this tournament that you're going through, and how do you think the team is playing? How do you think you're playing coming into this week's tournament?
I think we're playing probably the best soccer we've played all year. This is the perfect time to be stepping up as a team and showing the whole conference that we can compete with the best of the teams. Like you said, we beat Air Force, who's number one. So we definitely can compete, and we can beat these teams as long as we keep playing up to this level. And our seniors are stepping up big time. Jackson's stepping up. Everyone's contributing. Everybody's doing their job and their roles that we need them to do. So if we can keep doing this and just keep trusting each other, we got some high hopes for this week for sure.
Yeah, the Lopes, fans may not be aware of this. The Lopes are 4-0 against top 25 competition this season. They beat number 12 Wisconsin, number 20 Creighton, number 25 Seattle U, and number 8 Air Force. So it's not like you guys haven't been battle-tested to get ready for this week. I'm wondering on your end, going back to you, so when soccer is done, what is it you want to do? What has your education at GCU brought you?
So if I can keep playing, definitely keep playing. That's what I would want to do. But went to college for a reason, obviously. Have a backup plan, get a good education. And because I went through all this knee stuff, I was like, shoot, why not I learn about physical therapy? So I got a physical therapy degree. And if I do not play after I graduate, I'll probably just apply to grad school and go get my doctorates as a physical therapist.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah, so I mentioned everything works out for a reason.
No, that's true. Yeah, it's true. You know, I mentioned off the top having a physical therapist that made you cry, right?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Because right when you get out of surgery, everything's just so stiff, and you don't want to keep it stiff. So the only way to break that is to loosen it up. But that trying to get that flexion extension back in general is a pain. Mm-hmm. And they got to bend it and... it's not fun.
Yeah.
Definitely not fun.
I had scar tissue pop once while I was on the air doing this. It was not fun. Just sitting there all of a sudden, yeah, it wasn't fun.
Just
And I screamed like a, you know, like a bat out of
heck. Got some ice on it.
Yeah, it was not fun. When you look at GCU, so you were local, Ironwood High School, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And what was it for you to be the first in your family? Is that right? To go to college?
Yeah. Yep.
What did it mean to you to even have an opportunity to keep playing a sport and to go to college at the time? And how do you think it's worked out?
Well, it's worked out perfectly. Couldn't wish for it any other way. I always wanted to go to college as a kid. So like even through fourth, fifth grade, whatever it was, parents always emphasize grades, but and it really is huge. Maybe not in elementary school, but especially when you get into high school,
mm-hmm.
grades are so important. I've always been a stickler about it, and I've tried to stay on top of it because I wasn't the highest recruited player, but I did have a couple offers, and the only way I was going to be able to get to GCU was like a partial scholarship with academic. So that's a huge reason to staying academically strong because it just opens up so many doors to not only play soccer, but to go where you want to go.
Cool. And as you leave as a senior, you're leaving the program better than when you were first there, right? You feel like you've put your print on it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, cool. Well, good luck this week. And what a great story and a great journey for you. And you still have a chapter or two to write before
you're
done. And thanks for the visit.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. Thank you for having me, and hopefully you have a good day.
Thanks very much. There is Alex Ramirez, and that is Talk to the Lopes for this week.